meeting of the Tucson Supplemental Retirement System Board of Trustees. Art, would you call the roll, please?
Sure. Mark.
Here.
Jeff.
Here.
Jorge.
Sorry, that was a here.
Vivian.
Here.
And Kevin.
Yeah, I'm here.
Good. And I know Jim emailed me, said he wasn't going to be able to make it today due to prior commitments with the date change. So we have a quorum.
Great. Art, you had an item you need to take up.
Yeah, it's not necessarily an item that was agendized today. I just want to make an announcement. There, as of earlier this week, there was a leadership change in the business services department. We had Johanna Hernandez, who was the deputy director of finance or budget and research, rather, has been reassigned to the housing and community development department, which means that Vivian Neuseller, who was the deputy director controller for BSD, is going to slide into that role on an interim basis. And we have Aaron Williams, who is a principal auditor in the internal audit department, that is going to come in and step in as the deputy director, finance director, or BSD controller, as the position is outlined in the board rules. So I know Aaron Williams is here today. I just wanted to update the board. I didn't know which one of them would be here today. But given that Vivian is here, Vivian will act as the voting board member for today's meeting. And then Aaron will be in that role on an interim basis until that role is filled in whatever capacity the city decides to fill that moving forward. And just wanted to give the board an update, as the changes were announced yesterday. Thanks, Mark.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for not telling us that you were resigning, which is what I thought you were going to tell us, given
the nature of your breaking.
So we're glad to have you. Vivian, we will miss you, but I'm sure you won't be a stranger. And Aaron, welcome. If it's okay, we'll save introductions until the next meeting when you're actually here. But I'm glad you're here, and we're all available if you have questions or issues or concerns going forward. Art is a terrific onboarder for you, and I'm sure that you'll be ready to go next month. Okay. All right. Let's start with the consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, Jeff and Kevin, thank you both. Any discussion? All right, would you call the vote, please?
Sure, Mark.
Aye.
Kevin.
Aye.
Jeff.
Aye.
Jorge.
Aye.
Vivian.
Aye.
Elsa.
That was a thumbs up.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't hear you. We can't hear you, Elsa.
Elsa, you are muted.
I think she's indicating that she's voting aye.
Okay. Unmuted and still quiet. So yeah. That's an aye.
She's logging in on her phone.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next item on the agenda is the investment performance review. Gordy, you want to take it away?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'm still recovering after Art's announcement there. It scared me. So
I think you did it like that on purpose.
I'm
not the only one who got
good
that.
Good work, Art. Yeah. Right at the end of the year, you know, nice announcement. Yeah. I'll share some materials here. If that's all right with everyone.
You want to just say scary good and we can all go home?
Scary good, yeah, that's about right. You know, I think the summary here is mixed signals. Oh. And, you know, mixed signals across the economic landscape, but performance has really bounced back. So I'm excited to share some of that with you. First off, can everybody see the screen? Okay. So, you know, some familiar looking charts on this page. I'm going to go through this kind of quickly. You know, a great GDP number, 5.2% in the third quarter. That was the second reading. You know, some of these numbers are as of 9:30, and I have updates for them that I'll just verbalize as we go through. But the U.S. consumer really came on strong in the third quarter. We have a 5.2% GDP. So that's the first sort of data point I want to emphasize. The next, inflation, you know, through November, it's at 3.1. So it's come down drastically since it was at 9% a number of quarters ago. And part of that is with the Fed policy, right? So the Fed, as we know, has been hiking rates, but it's been very extreme. So it's been 11 hikes over the last several months, and we're now at the highest rate we've seen on the short-term rate in 22 years, right? 5.25 to 5.5%. Nice rate to get on cash. The Fed did indicate at their meeting this week that they're thinking about some rate cuts in 2024. They actually alluded to 3 rate cuts. So that would get us closer to, you know, 4.75-ish on the overnight rates. So still high in a reasonable rate, but maybe coming down a little bit. Unemployment still remains really strong, right? 3.7%. One of the things that we have seen is that wage growth has really started to dwindle a little bit. And so, you know, the broad economic indicators are solid. Now, behind the scenes, we see the yield curve still inverted, right? It's been inverted for a number of months now. And what happens, it's a sign. It doesn't cause a recession, but it's typically a sign that a recession is coming when the yield curve inverts. And it's been over a year now that it's been inverted. We have the purchasing manufacturer index in contraction territory at 46.2. Stable readings around 50, so 46.2 is low. And, you know, we also have housing, which we're all hoping that housing prices start to fall with these higher rates. But again, it's been a supply problem on the housing side that's largely kept it, kept housing prices elevated. So you put all this together and you take a look at how the capital markets have performed. And, you know, what I want to emphasize is that we basically have returns through 9/30 of 2023 that have a starting point of 2022. And we know 2022 is a really tough market for equities and bonds, but what you can see here is the progress we've made back to those 2022 numbers, right? So you see that the S&P 500 is down 4.3% since 2022. It's having a strong year to date. And actually, what's not captured here is the rally that we've seen really through November and December. So now the S&P 500 is up year to date 26.2% through yesterday. And so now it's positive since 2022. We've kind of crossed that high watermark for the S&P 500. Small cap stocks, similarly, a great rally here in the last quarter. Year to date, you see 2.5% through 9:30. Well, through yesterday, it's up 14.2%. Right. So now that's breaking even versus the 2022 numbers. The other important one here is you see the Bloomberg aggregate, the core bonds down 8.3. We know that's due to interest rate increases. Well, rates have actually come down in the last quarter, sort of year to date. And so the Bloomberg ag now in 2023 calendar year is up 4.6%. Right. So it hasn't clawed back all of those losses since 2022, but it's making some headwind. So this has very much been a rebound year in the capital markets to 2022, which is a very positive sign. Now, what's different right now? Because we have a lot of indicators pointing towards recession. Here's what I think is different. There are really two things. One is unemployment that we've talked about. Started to see some small cracks in unemployment with the rising rates from the Fed, but nothing material. And so that's one thing that's different versus other recessionary type periods. The other is looking at excess savings. So usually what happens when you're in a recession is savings kind of, personal savings kind of bottoms out and then it starts to increase. And what we have this time, you know, potentially heading into a recession is this excess savings still accumulated. That's different. That's why we're seeing a 5.2% GDP number. That's why people are still willing to take risk in the equity market. We have more people in the U.S. investing in public equities than we ever have before in the history of the country. So, you know, right now, this is kind of what's different. This is keeping the capital markets afloat. But I'll tell you, economists are scratching their heads because they look at most traditional readings and they think we should be falling into a recession or some kind of contraction, but it's just not happening. And I think that's still just the unwinding of 12 years of easy monetary policy that's really bolstered people's savings and balance sheets.
Gordy, this may be a bit in the weeds, but I'm just curious. The stuff I read about inflation keeps talking about, and mostly it's Paul Krugman, pointing out that the 3.1% is a 12-month average, and I, you know, you need to compare apples to apples, but the current rate, essentially year over year, October, say, or November, is closer to 2. Is that something that folks in the investment community talk about and focus on, or do they talk about the year-long average number?
Yeah, a lot of times you see the annualized number off of the last monthly reading of CPI, right? So that's what we're kind of talking about, this 3%. Right. It's just an annualized number on the last monthly reading. Or what you're saying is over the last 12 months, CPI has been closer to 2%. The reason people annualize the most recent number is because they think it's a more accurate reading rather than looking back over the prior 12 months. But your point is taken. I think what we need to remember, no matter how you look at that CPI number, is that it's an increase on what we've already had, right? So if CPI was 3% last year, it grew at 3% last year and it grows at 3% this year, that's 3% compounded on the 3% that already occurred last year, right? And so it's just an increasing rates over time.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. So I wanted to talk about one phenomenon here and just go back to my other screen. Here we go. So here we're looking at equity index concentration. And I find this chart to be pretty eye-popping. Basically, we're looking at cumulative returns through 2023 of the S&P 500. And it's broken out into two constituents here. We have the S&P Magnificent 7, if you will, and you have the rest of the 493 stocks in the index. And so basically this is saying the index has been driven by the top 7 stocks, right? Those technology stocks. And without them, the S&P 500 would be largely flat this year. And so what this does is creates a really tough environment for active managers, because if you don't have a full weight to those top 7, it doesn't matter what you do with the rest of the 493. This has been a really good time to be to have a passive component of your portfolio, which you do with the S&P 500 index fund in the large cap area of the portfolio. And so this has just been a really tough challenge for active managers in a really narrow market. And what we see now are the valuations of the top 10 versus the remaining stocks sort of in that top left. You can see that the top 10 stocks are overvalued versus the rest of the index with the current price to earnings metric at almost 26 times. The remaining stocks are trading around 17 times, right? And so this is really increasing the overall valuation of the index. I wanted to touch on real estate as well. You know, an important area of the portfolio. You have two J.P. Morgan funds. We're going to talk about J.P. Morgan because they had an announcement. But when we look at how the overall market has been performing. Really look at that NCREIF Odyssey Index. Remember, that is a collection of 25 core private real estate funds, similar to the JP Morgan funds that you're in. And you can see over the last year, down 12.9. Price appreciation, there were price declines of 15%, right? Pretty big decline that we saw in the last year. Really kind of trailing on the ends. What we see with private real estate is it trails public real estate and often the public equity market as well. And so, you know, public equity had a tough 2022. Now we're seeing a tough 2023 for private real estate. And so down 12.9 for the year. But when you look over the last 10 years, it's still a pretty positive outlook, right? 7.2% for the Odyssey benchmark. Where has the pain been? Well, when you look at the bottom chart here, it's really apartments, which had price declines, and office, which continues to struggle. Office vacancy rates are up, and some of the major metropolis areas, right, the real estate is being repurposed, the office is being repurposed into other better-in-use type situations. But it's still shaking out, and it could be a 3 to 5 year problem on the office spectrum. Most funds are trying to get rid of their office and retail and move into industrial. And that's really been the name of the game for JP Morgan. So it's kind of a brief snapshot on the markets. Are there any questions from the group?
Hey, Gordy, this is Art. I don't know if this is an appropriate time to talk about JP Morgan or if we want to wait to get to your.
No, let's do it.
Cause we've talked about JP Morgan now, it seems like for probably 2, maybe 3 years and their performance or lack thereof and the underperformance.
Four years.
Okay.
They were here in October pre-COVID.
I'm not seeing the performance necessarily improve in the way that I think we expected. And then with the most recent change, I know it's a very difficult, just a very difficult portfolio to get out of. But at what point should or would the board decide that we need to start looking at maybe making a change? And I'll pose that to the board at large. But just seeing some of the things and the trends, what the story that they've told us doesn't necessarily line up with what we're seeing on paper.
Yeah, I'm happy to share some views first, and then we can have a broader discussion. So Kim Adams, the lead portfolio manager of the Strategic Property Fund, which is JP Morgan's flagship core real estate fund, she departed and went to Clarion. Clarion is a competing firm in this space. They have their own core fund. Kim has been on the lead PM for 5 years. She's worked on the portfolio for 10 years. And she was the day-to-day lead and trigger puller. So now there are experienced people at JP Morgan. I'm not saying that there aren't, but the new team that's going into place is experienced, but they're untested together. And so there's some concerns going forward, like any portfolio manager change, right? With another strategy, we have some concerns and some questions going forward. Pair that with the performance shortfall that we've seen. And I'd actually like to show the board members what that looks like. If you'll bear with me 1 second here. Okay, let me get to the right page. Actually, let me go back a little bit. I'll try to show it to you in a table so it's easy to see. Here we are. Okay, these are net of fee returns. The fees on these real estate products are high. They're the highest that you have in the portfolio. Strategic Property Fund is right around 1%, right? And so we're showing the Strategic Property Fund against this peer group of other core funds net. And the return that you see here is the equally weighted basically average of the other funds in the group. And when we look over 3 years, obviously there's disappointment there. 5.1 versus 6.7. Same over 5 years, and you know, it's really deteriorated their 10-year record now. So they're 1% behind over the last 10 years. Basically their fee. Right? And so that's a shortfall, that's disappointing. We have the explanation from JP Morgan, right, that this has been due to really their sector positioning, retail and office. I think it's what happens sometimes when you're the biggest fund in the space. And so JP Morgan Strategic Property is the largest fund, core fund in this universe. And, you know, they prided themselves on having Class A high quality malls and office space. Well, that's obviously changed, right? And so their struggle has been to transition this portfolio to industrial, to transition this portfolio to other sectors. And they've been doing that, right? But their portfolio still has this shortfall. So I don't know that we want to make a decision today, Art, but we've talked a lot about real estate, I think is the point. We've been waiting for these funds to recover. We haven't seen it. And now we have this portfolio manager announcements. And so I think what I would propose is that Callan comes back to the board with some options of what to do with the real estate portfolio. You know, we can hear from JP Morgan again, and they're going to tell us the same story. We like our current positioning. We like the forward outlook for the portfolio. And that may be true, but the experience that we've had has been lackluster, to say the least. Now, if you wanted to get money out, they have a queue right now about 15% of the net asset value of the portfolio. So it's going to take some time to pay that down. And if you went into the queue, you would sort of get payments along the line, and it would take 2, maybe even 3 years to get all of your money back, right? And so this could be a long transition out of this fund. We also think at Callan, my real estate group, that the announcement of Kim Adams leaving is going to create a greater redemption experience, right? So we expect that people are going to be redeeming from this fund even more. So I'll kind of leave it there for the moment and see if there are any further discussions or asks of the board, you know, for Callan to come back with.
Discussion? Kevin?
Yes, I do have a question or comment. So, Gordy, I mean, this person you said that, I think you said her name is Kim, that's departing or has left. I mean, yep. Couldn't we attribute the results over the last 3 and 5 years to her? I mean, maybe this is going to be a positive. I understand that there may be more people running for the exit just because there's been a change in management, but maybe she was in part the problem.
Yeah, you know, I think what she was trying to do is real estate here is kind of a slow moving ship. It's really hard to change the portfolio. I mean, you could do it in a 3 year period. But point taken, we actually had a pretty positive opinion of her given her relationships within the real estate environment. I mean, some of this is transactional and actually being able to get the deals done, Kevin. And she was really good at that side. Whether or not they were good deals is a different story, but she was able to get them done pretty efficiently and is well regarded.
Okay. And then two other questions, Gordy. Is the benchmark, is that a median of other funds or is it some hypothetical fund?
No, it's not something you can invest in. It's a weighted average. Sorry. It's an equally weighted average. It's just an average of all the 25 funds' performance in this, all the core funds.
Okay. And then what is the distinction again? Remind me, what's the difference between our strategic property fund and the income and growth? I thought one was a little more blue chip and the other one's kind of, you know, a little lower down on the scaling.
Yeah. So income and growth is what we call a value add fund. It has higher leverage.
Okay.
And, So it's kind of the strategic property is the core fund, and then you have a core plus fund, if you will, in income and growth.
Thanks, Gordy.
Yep.
More discussion? Well, let's, I think we need to do two. One, to the extent that there are questions and discussion about substance, we ought to have those as we just did a bit with Kevin, but we also ought to talk about process, and maybe let's do the first one for a few, you know, few minutes. If, and if there are no other questions, you know, that's fine. But then we should save a few minutes at least for discussion about the process so that we develop a plan. I think what I'm hearing from Callan and from Art is that we ought to be thinking about a process, whether that results in our doing something or deciding to do nothing or somewhere in between. But we ought to discuss that. And I suspect, I hope anyway, that the answer is not to have them come back again and talk to us, because we've done that now, I think, 3 out of the last 4 years, and they're very nice people, and they have a story that seems to generally, you know, fit the facts. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand why office and retail are struggling, but we don't seem to be getting to better. But with that in mind, Kevin, did you have something, or are you just blanking on and off?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't.
No problem.
I didn't have
any
questions. I'm sorry.
So, Gordy, is it fair to look at this situation, and we've discussed in the past at some length the fact that real estate is hard to turn around. Is it fair to say that it isn't a big surprise that the numbers don't change year to year?
Well, I would expect the trend to start improving for JP Morgan. I mean, they're very well researched, and we just haven't seen the numbers. So, you know, I'm trying to get to process a little bit, and here's how I'm thinking about it. You know, I think the first question is just assessing JP Morgan on their performance and this portfolio manager turnover. So kind of excluding what we know is that you can't get your money out right away. So kind of how you think about this from my perspective is, if you could get your money back, what would you do? Would you take it all now, or would you be patient with JP Morgan? And I think that question leads to what we do next. If everyone says, well, let's give them more time, let's be patient, well, then we just let this ship keep running. But if there's a desire that, well, you know, we would fire them if we could, and let me get it straight. You can fire them. It just takes a long time to fire them and get your money back. You know, I think we look at it kind of in that regard. And if you say, well, we would take all of our money right now that if we could, well, then we need to think about the process of doing that and where you would put that money. And there are a couple things you could do, right? You could hire another core manager, and as the money from JP Morgan comes in, you could give it to the new core manager. Now, those cash flows don't line up one-to-one, and the timing won't match, but that would kind of be the philosophy. As money comes back, you put it in the new fund.
How would you, assuming we went through a process, selected a new fund, we need some money to give them at the outset, and we wouldn't necessarily have any money right away. Would we devote incoming cash flows generally to that fund and supplement or perhaps pay back to our cash as we get money from JP Morgan?
Yeah, so I've seen other clients.
The outset is my
point. I've seen other clients in this situation with another manager. And the new manager that they hired was willing to take zero on day one and invest the proceeds as they came in from the other manager.
Okay. All right. They don't need a minimum at the outset.
No, as long as they know what the ultimate mandate is expected to be, that's usually, you know, all they need.
Are we headed for, if we get rid of JP Morgan, are we looking at a potential Aberdeen situation, and if in terms of a run on the bank type of concept, or are we early enough?
Oh, no.
We're not going to be a
core manager.
I think the biggest concern right now that you face is that the redemption queue is going to increase with this announcement of Kim Adams departing, and it'll take longer to get your money out.
Okay.
But the size of your investment is very small in relation to the size of this fund.
Okay. And you don't think the market in any way is going to look at the situation as Kevin alluded, that maybe this is a good thing?
They may. You know, honestly, it's people have the structure of the fund and getting your money back kind of ties your hands. But I think the question still remains for the board members. You know, do you want to retain or fire JP Morgan? And if it's fire, or if you're leaning that way, and I'm not trying to push you to that, but if you're leaning that way, then we take actions and give you options of what you might do with that money.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just provide a suggestion. I think we can probably take a deeper dive at our January board meeting on this. I was necessarily prepared for the board to make a decision today, because there isn't, aside from the performance data that we're going to share, or that Gordy has shared, there isn't a lot here on which to base the decision unless it's strictly performance. I think we can agendize this for January. We can have Gordy, Craig, and the real estate folks come back in, provide us with an update on the market, the sector, and then have this formally agendized to speak only on JP Morgan in January. And should the board decide to make a decision, we can have a conversation about that in January where I can properly agendize it, and we can get a greater set of education materials out to the board. Because it's not a decision that we should necessarily take lightly. And I want to make sure that we're properly and thoroughly vetting other options and what that process would look like, rather than taking that decision here today. And also want to make sure that Gordy goes back and covers the entirety of the portfolio and the performance that we've seen through September 30th.
I wasn't suggesting that we're heading toward a decision. I think where my head was if people have thoughts, questions, et cetera, they might help to inform a discussion next month in terms of materials that we see and the like. But I wholeheartedly agree this is not something we should make a snap decision on. Are there any more questions, thoughts, et cetera, with an eye toward we're going to have a discussion in the near future? And Gordy, in that regard, I do have one, but I don't want to cut anybody else off. Are there available real estate funds for us to look at that have solved for office and retail, but at the same time are not so focused that when the turn goes away from industrial in a year, we're back in the same soup, just with a different flavor?
The short answer is yes.
Okay. All right.
Chairman, I just got a couple quick questions or comments. I think we should certainly look at this a little bit more detailed, and the discussion in January to me at least makes sense. Are we considering both of our JP Morgan real estate? I mean, both of them haven't been, scoring real well over the last 5 or 10 years. And so I don't know why. Are we just focused on strategic property, which I don't, if that's the case, that's fine. But it seems like if we're opening up this issue, we may want to have a discussion about where we're at on income and growth. Or is there something different there, Gordy, that I'm missing?
No, I mean, the income and growth story, we've heard from the portfolio manager several times how she's transitioning the fund to be more industrial. That process has been occurring. And so you actually made a capital commitment to this income and growth funds. It was something that was done from a rebalancing perspective a while ago, and then they finally called the capital. We talked to them about not providing them that capital today, But it was contractually bound to the agreements of the product. And so that's why it occurred. But to your broader question, Kevin, I think everything is on the table here, the entire structure of the real estate.
Okay.
And there are options, right? You know, replace both, keep one, not the other. Do you want a core plus fund in there? Or maybe you just want two core funds. Those are all things that we could talk about.
Okay. And back to this portfolio manager that's moved over to a competitor, and I can see why a portfolio manager may want to jump ship in this situation, just because it kind of they end up kind of just being involved in restructuring and trying to rebalance the portfolio while there's a lot of people running for the exits. So the job probably isn't as much fun as it would have been in normal pattern. The company that she moved to, or the fund that she moved to, has that already been transitioned, or is she going to walk into the same issue at that fund as well?
No, and she's
theory a little bit in terms of, well, move to something that's already transitioned.
So let me describe a little bit of what happened at J.P. Morgan and what she's doing at Clarion. So J.P. Morgan, right, strategic property fund to be the head portfolio manager. She was basically at the top of her career there. She didn't really have anywhere else to go, right? She wasn't going to be the CEO of JP Morgan or anything like that. So she kind of felt, and this is, you know, my research team's impression, that she was capped there. And so when she went to Clarion, Clarion's a smaller firm. She's actually not going to work on their core funds. She is going to be in more of the alternative type real estate sectors, trying to raise money for new products. And she has a greater track to management there to be in the C-suite. And so some of this was opportunity, you know, to perhaps be the CEO of Clarion someday. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but a greater upside career track than what she had at J.P. Morgan, where she was kind of, you know, capped out, if you will.
Okay. So greater opportunities at the new company, and also gets out of this rebalancing kind of headaches that she currently would have at J.P. Morgan. Okay. That's the only questions I had. Thanks, Chairman.
Sure. Thank you. Anybody else? Well, Gordy, thank you for prompting the discussion and giving us a good bit of information and certainly a lot to think about and consider. You're good with next month as a time frame to bring us more.
I'm going to start working on it right away. Depending on so January or February at the latest, I would say.
Okay. We'll work with Art on that. And, my sense is this is not, and we shouldn't think of this as a crisis situation. We ought to go through our normal drill with the understanding that we have exhausted the visits with the nice suits and the well-spoken people who are telling us that, you know, help is on the way and the turn is around the corner. We're in a different mode. So,
yep.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing I'll add is, without exhausting ourselves on this, this is not necessarily something that we have to decide at the meeting when you first present a more thorough view of the situation. If it takes a couple of months, it takes a couple of months. You know.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Yeah. I think what's important here and is the process that you alluded to, Mr. Chairman. Well, not alluded, that you said. And we'll follow that process in a fiduciary manner to help you reach a conclusion. But there's no urgency from my perspective to do so.
Yeah. I guess the last thing I ought to add in all of this is that, and I think everybody sees this, you know, real estate and I guess our alternative infrastructure are by their nature not quick turnarounds. So in a sense, the process needs to fit the nature of the investment, and we need to recognize that we are buying into something that will likely first be really showing significant outcomes when many of us will not be around on the board anymore. So we ought to be doing this slowly and with due care.
Agreed. All right.
What else?
Well, I have a snapshot of the asset allocation of the portfolio. I just wanted to show you that. You see that real estate is overweight. That's because of the contribution to income and growth that we saw come in. So you're 2% over there, but everything is in line according to the investment policy statement. You can see the net of fee returns over time here. You know, the last 3 years has been challenging. And I'll show you why here in a moment, but you see the 3.9 versus the 4.6. It's really due to a tough 2022. In 2022, you have a bit of a growth orientation on the public equity side, and that hurt you. But after helping you for so very, very long, right? And so 10 years, you're still ahead, 6.9 versus 6.2. When we look at your managers, right? So this is within the sort of executive summary letter we provide in the front of the report. We show the peer group rankings for 1, 3, and 5 years of your managers. And, you know, 1 year, we don't pay a lot of attention to that. 3 years becomes more important. 5 years, you know, that's a suitable amount of time. And you can see that everybody here is, you know, pretty close to medium or above, except for these JP Morgan funds, right, who had struggled versus peers. So these are not relative to benchmarks. This is versus other similar type funds. And so they've really struggled. The other is the American Century International Small Cap. When you hired them, we knew that they had a very growthy portfolio implementation and they would ebb and flow a bit with the style. And they did really well when you hired them. Value has been in favor in international markets, especially over the last year. And so, you know, they have trailed. You see them at 74 there. But, you know, if we put them in perspective, they're supposed to be an alpha generator in a risky asset class of international small cap equity. And they're going to kind of ebb and flow with style. And we will expect them to bounce back when growth comes into favor and outperform over a full market cycle. So they're kind of at the bottom of their cycle right now. I'd like to move ahead a little bit. Look at some, here we go. This is the cash flow slide. Sorry, I had to shrink it. You probably can't see it now. I'll make it bigger. So just going to the total plan line here at the bottom. This is last quarter. You see $906 million. There were $30.5 million. Here we go. Sorry, big fingers. You can see $30.5 million of investment return, and then there was about $9.6 million that came out of the funds. There was some rebalancing activity. You can see this almost $12 million to the income and growth funds, but ultimately $9.6 came out. Came out of the plan during the last quarter. I want to show you a few more slides. I'll start with some total fund performance. And, you know, I like this this line chart here because it shows you over the last 10 years how you've done versus your target on a cumulative basis. And you can see that blue line is ahead of the green line. Right. And so ultimately, that's what we're trying to beat. That green line is a reflection of the risk tolerance of the overall pension plan. And with active management over time, you've been able to exceed that target. And, you know, when we look at risk return space, you know, your benchmark is pretty close to median versus other public funds. The crosshairs here is other median. Is the median of other public funds from a return and risk perspective over 10 years. These orange dots are all the public funds in that peer group. And you can see that, you know, you take on the actual portfolio, you take a little bit more risk, but you've been compensated for that, right, over the 10 years. So that's what we want to see. And that's certainly positive. Looking at the total fund ranking, you know, the last year you outperformed your benchmark. This 3-year number is really what I was talking about before, you know, 4.2 versus 4.6. That was due to a tough 2022. And, you know, as we look out longer term, 5 years and 10 years, you know, I guess the thing that's cool about your program is that your target is median, right? So from a risk perspective, you're basically average versus other public funds. But the way that you implement has meant that you've exceeded that and actually gone into the top quartile. And so that's a testament to implementation and manager selection. So let's go back to that now, and I'll just show you some net of fee returns over across the managers. And so we've got a bit of a different story here between the 3 and the 10-year number. We look at domestic equity, which is the largest allocation you have in the portfolio. Over the last 3 years, you can see that you've trailed 8.7 versus 9.9. Well, that's not true over 10 years, right? And so this 3 years has been a little bit of a different period. Your large cap underperformed over those 3 years. Some of that is due to PIMCO Stocks Plus. So what PIMCO Stocks Plus is basically a strategy that's buying an S&P 500 futures contract and then taking some of the collateral investment and putting it in short-term fixed income. The thought is if you can get a little bit of yield out of your fixed income, you can beat the S&P 500. And this is a very high-quality, short-duration fixed income investment with the collateral, but rates went up over this period, which made the fixed income decline, which meant that the overall product underperformed the S&P 500. And then T. Rowe Price, which we know, there were periods of time where we were looking at T. Rowe Price's numbers, and they were so outsized and higher, so much higher than the benchmark, that we were questioning whether or not they were real in the growth environment, right? And now they've come back to earth a little bit, and you can see that over 3 years, you know, behind by almost 3%. But 10 years, right, you know, they're much closer to their benchmark. Similarly, in small and mid-cap equity, you know, this 10-year number, sorry, I lost the heading, but, you know, 9.8, well ahead of your benchmark over 10 years. Well, 3 years, you're behind. And it's really because of Champlain. Champlain has been such a good manager for you, though, over the long term. And you can see their results, 11.3 versus 9%. So, you know, this is kind of a short-term anomaly for Champlain, but it certainly impacts the 3-year number. International equity, we've restructured recently with the removal of Aberdeen and Acadian coming on board. And you can see over 10 years, you know, there was a shortfall versus the index, 3% versus 3.4. And that certainly has been there over the last 3 years. Causeway has been the bright spot here, your international value-oriented manager. And we talked about American Century, and we see the shortfalls over 3 years. So going forward, right, I think we all feel good about this international equity construct now that we put it in place, but, you know, some of the historic numbers aren't great. Lastly here, fixed income, 10 years, you're ahead. 3 years, you're ahead, but, you know, it's a negative number for the benchmark and the portfolio. And Capital Group, you know, it's the very early days. We have seen rates increase since they have been on board, but they've been, you know, basically in line with the benchmark over that period of time. PIMCO has a history of beating their index. And so they're really driving the fixed income asset class outperformance. We talked about real estate, and then you can also see IFM here. They have a tough benchmark because it's CPI plus an absolute 4%. And so there'll certainly be times that they underperform that in the short term. But you know, we've got a year here where we're reviewing their performance and certainly off to a good start, right? 9.9% ahead of the bogey here. So, you know, looking back, real estate is certainly a concern. I think we're going to talk about that. International equity was a concern and has been shored up. There's nothing else really that's jumping out. Everything's very explainable. As long-term investors, I wouldn't suggest that you make any changes to the portfolio.
Okay. Any questions for Gordy? Any comments or observations?
I just got a couple quick questions. And sure. The one slide where you showed that we had, I think it was 9 million went yeah. outside of the plan. Is that just to cover funding applications for retirees? Or am I, and again, I've missed the last couple of meetings, including the board retreat. So some of this stuff may have been previously discussed. So you could just obviously give me the bullet point. A response, and maybe my mind just isn't thinking about it right. But the 9.6, is that's actually cash leaving the system, or is this just a delta for something else? I'm sorry for the misunderstanding.
That's money coming out.
Okay, and so
and the purpose. I mean, I don't actually know what exactly all of it was for. Maybe benefit payments. Art, we'll probably know.
Yeah, I can speak to that. We're averaging a little over $3 million a month in requests to supplement our benefit payments. So that's almost entirely what that is.
Okay. So given what you said, averaging $3 million a month, we should expect this routinely on a quarterly basis? Or is this – and I know that we talked extensively about liquidity and making sure we had sufficient funding or structure – to deal with these cash requirements. But is that kind of the status we're at right now then, Art, is $3 million a month is just something we should plan on? And that's what you're dealing with on essentially a day-to-day or month-to-month basis?
That's correct.
Okay. And so what is the overall strategy? I mean, how are you – where do you typically pull – I mean, I know I can look at this chart, but what's your overall view of how you're going to pull $3 million a month out of the plan? And what asset class is it coming from?
Sure. That's a good question. So what we do internally is we look at any point in time when we're going to make the cash draws, we look at what manager may be overweight to their target, or what manager has the available. And then if they're overweight, how much are they overweight and what managers are we available to pull from? Obviously our total pool that we can pull from is pretty limited because we can't pull from real estate. We can't pull from infrastructure. And so it's really from our equity and fixed income folks. So that's what we do. That's what we look at. And we take from, in some cases, it might be one manager that's completely overweight depending on how their performance is factored in over the month, or it could be a little bit from each. From a fixed income manager or an equity manager that's overweight. But we really adhere to the target allocations, and how much that an individual manager might be overweight to that target.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks for that. And then one last question, Gordy. Any sense of what this, our total plan balance is at this point in time? Obviously, over the last couple of weeks with rates starting to step down dramatically, equity markets have increased substantially, and it's kind of moved away to some extent from the Magnificent Seven or what are they, the high-tech firms.
Right. We do have a mark through I don't have that number.
That's right.
But all I can say is that the fourth quarter has been really strong.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Okay. Art, back to Kevin's question about the monthly cash, is that $3 million net of new contributions, or is that $3 million a gross number?
Is that net of new contributions?
Well, we're paying out $3 million a month for benefits. Do we have money coming in every month? Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's an over and above what we take in contributions.
Okay. Because the first money we pay out, obviously, the first cash we have is the money that came in the door yesterday.
Correct.
Okay. But we pull another $3 million a month out. All right.
Pete has his hand up. He may want to chime in.
Go ahead, Pete.
Art answered that pretty well. So I was just going to give you some background numbers. The benefit payments are about $7 to $7.1 million each month, and the money coming in from payroll is about $4 million each month.
Oh, so that's the $3 million.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you.
That does seem like it is an increase. You know, one of the things when we do an asset liability study is we look at the and we model the cash flow obligations and what percentage that is of the funds. If you do $36 million, which is three a month, and you know, over $900 million in the portfolio, that's 4%. And 4% cash flow negative, right, as a percentage, you can still have the amount of illiquid assets that you currently do. And really, when you get into the 5, 7, 8, 9% range of cash outflows, that's when you have to start thinking about the illiquid portion of your assets. But you're nowhere near that.
Pete, do you have your hand up?
Nope, no comment. Just okay. Clicking buttons randomly.
Okay, because why not? other questions for Gordy?
And I will just add on that. You know, we have seen an uptick in our retirement counts. You know, they used to be between 5 and 7 a month, and now I think we're between 10, 15, in some cases 20 per month. Mm-hmm. And you all see it when you adopt or approve the ratification reports. And so, you know, we are adding benefit payments, and we do have a fair amount of, eligible employees who are, you know, who meet the eligibility requirement for retirement, that, you know, are gonna be, you know, retired eventually. And so, I think the other question that I have for Gordy is related to that asset liability study, because I do believe it's time for that, and we'll have to start to prepare for that. I believe it's in 24, that study takes place, but we, you know, I asked the board the last time we did this to sort of consider that, because it is going to become a more prevalent number as we move with these retirements.
Fleshing that out a little further, maybe Vivian or Jeff or Art can, or Pete for that matter, can provide a little more, or Elsa, you can provide a little more insight into the issue. Assuming that what appears to be an increase in retirements is not just a fluke for a short period, I would assume as people retire, the overall city payroll probably shrinks a bit, because people who have worked long enough to be retiring typically are at the higher end of the pay scale. Is that something that is borne out in fact or not, or are we having to hire people at pretty high pay rates?
So I can take the first pass at that, and then I can allow Vivian and Elsa to chime in, and maybe Jeff from their respective departments or divisions. But I know in business services, we've had a hard time hiring people, and have had to bring in we've had to bring in candidates, approaching and passing midpoint in some cases. You know, we just hired a benefits administrator, and, I can tell you firsthand that we exceeded midpoint for that candidate, that position. You know, I think the police department is pretty structured as to where they bring in police academy recruits. Same thing for fire. But we've had a hard time finding people and have had to accommodate pay requests, to get candidates in the door. And I see Jeff has his hand up. So that's just all my experience in BSD. And I don't know if Elsa wants to chime in from the global HR perspective and Jeff.
Jeff and then Elsa.
Well, you know, getting ahead of it a little bit, since Elsa's with HR, she could probably speak much more eloquently, and I just am anecdotal, but I would echo Art's experience and say that, you know, we are seeing more and more of the new folks that we bring in coming in at or around midpoint at very least. We are struggling to try to fill our vacancies as quickly as we can, just because we've gone through kind of a historic period of time where we've been understaffed. And so now it's a priority to maintain, if not grow, our levels. And just as a matter of clarity, our police officers are actually not in TSRS, but we are making a major push to professionalize the police department where appropriate. And that's to say, you know, if you don't need a badge and a gun to do a critical function, then we're not going to assign a badge and a gun to do that. So we are growing our civilian ranks at the police department.
Elsa, or Vivian, rather.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with what Art explained, but we've also been seeing pay adjustments on an annual basis. And I agree, the talent that we're bringing in now, according to the market, we're bringing them in at midpoint or over midpoint. So I agree. There will be some adjustments. I've seen payroll totals pretty much go up slightly, but it's primarily because of the pay adjustments. And as you know, we have a high vacancy, you know, rate of positions, that we've been averaging about 600 vacancies a year. That's been slightly growing. But I would agree there's going to be some fluctuation on the payroll side.
I agree. For the last 2 or 3 years, the city has gone into a practice of bringing applicants, as Art said, up to midpoint based on education experience, which is a change for the city. We would always, prior to that, bring them in at the minimum. And in order for us to stay competitive, we changed to that format like 2 to 3 years ago. And so payroll has not decreased, I would believe, with regards to the change in how we bring people in. They're coming in at least at midpoint in most cases.
I guess the study will bear all of this out, but we're clearly seeing adjustments in workplace pay that seem like they're a bit out of the ordinary. And I guess it's worth keeping in mind, because it will play out over time, and you know, long after we're all gone.
And what I will say to that, Mr. Chairman, is we both, in conjunction with the asset liability study, we also are going to look at our 5-year valuation study, and that will, you know, they'll look at over the next 5 year or the past previous 5 years, and then what we're looking at in the future 5 years. And there may be a change in some of the assumptions that we need to use to calculate where our liability is from the actuarial valuation side. And so those will be both convened in 24, I believe, and presented to the board at some point to review those assumptions and the capital market expectations. So that's on the radar.
The folks who work in my office are in the main non-lawyers making more money inflation adjusted than I made as a baby lawyer in 1981 when I first started my career. More money after adjusting for inflation. It is definitely a different workplace than it was in the past. All right. Anything else? I'm sorry?
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Anything else for Gordy? Thank you, as always, Gordy, for a great job and a great presentation. This is thorough and gives us lots of things to think about, which is a big part of the purpose. So,
well, thank you. Happy holidays to everyone.
Thank you.
Happy holidays, Gordy.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Thanks.
Thanks, Gordy.
Thank you, Gordy.
Stay warm. All right. I think we're to the 2024 board calendar.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. This is just an annual item that we need to complete for the clerk's office. It's just updating the board calendar to reflect the fourth Thursday of every month, except for the October, November, and December. We will plan on having a retreat again in October. It's usually the last Friday of the month. And then Thursday is usually a week before Christmas and a week before Thanksgiving. We've done a lot of hard work in the 3 years leading up to this 2024. So we may find ourselves not with the ability to not have a meeting in a certain month, depending on the agenda. But again, it's tentatively planned for the fourth Thursday of every month. And I do need board action on this so I can submit to the clerk's office.
All right. Is there a motion to approve the 2024 board calendar?
So moved.
Kevin, second.
I'll second.
Jeff, thank you. Any discussion? Call the vote, please.
Mark.
Aye.
Kevin.
Aye.
Jeff.
Aye.
Elsa.
Aye.
Vivian.
Aye.
Jorge.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0.
Okay. Anything else on the agenda? It looks like not. Before we have a motion to adjourn, thank you all for another wonderful year. It's much appreciated. A wonderful holiday and a happy new year. Somebody want to move to adjourn?
I'll move to adjourn.
I caught Kevin.
And I think Jeff was the second.
Okay.
All right. Art, call the vote, please.
Mark.
Aye.
Jeff.
Aye.
Kevin.
Aye.
Vivian.
Aye.
Elsa.
Aye.
Jorge.
Aye.
We are adjourned at 9:37. Happy holidays to everyone. Right. Thank you so much for being
here.
Happy holidays.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.